Knew you would.
Just give me a minute to put on some makeup.
Sorry, you're breaking up.
Even when exercise is the last thing on your mind, don't give in to excuses. Your sisters can provide the motivation and support you need to eat right, get active, and reduce your risk of cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. With the power of sisterhood, there's just no excuse not to live a healthier life. For more information, go to everydaychoices.org. Brought to you by the American Cancer Society, the American Diabetes Association, the American Heart Association, the Ad Council, and this station.
That's right. You got to have support from your sisters. That's all you need. Just support from your sisters, and then everything will be just fine. All right, let's get to it.
Welcome back, everybody, and the first of our delights for you tonight is the fantastic...
Hello, it's Chris Earle. It's WMFO in Medford. It's the Kinks. It's Triple Play. Here with you until 8 p.m.
Well, it's really good to be here tonight in Philadelphia. I was walking around the street today, and this big policeman came up to me, and he said to me, "Excuse me, is your name Ray Davies?" Hey. I said, "What's your name?" He said, "Hello, hello." I met a girl called Lola, took her back to my place, feeling guilty, feeling scared, hidden cameras everywhere. Is anybody here paranoid? Girl, I want you here with me, but I'm really not as cool as I'd like to be. There's a rat under my bed, and there's a little green man in my head, and there's a true blue inside of me who keeps stopping me, wanting your love and your happiness. Does anybody here take medication? Doctor, doctor, help me please, I know you'll understand. There's a time device inside of me, a self-destruction man. There's a red under my bed, and there's a little green man in my head. Do you know what he said? You're not going crazy, you're just a bit sad, cause there's a man in you, knowing you're tearing the engine too. Paranoia, the destroyer.
Paranoia.
Here we go, number two or three in the triple play. It's the Kinks. Remember the Kinks? They remember you.
They put a parking lot on a piece of land where the supermarket used to stand. Before that, they put up a bowling alley on the site that used to be the local pally. That's where the big band used to come and play. My sister went there on a Saturday. Come dancing, all her boyfriends used to come and call. Why not come dancing? It's only natural. Another Saturday, another date. She would be ready, but she'd always make him wait. In the hallway, in anticipation. He didn't know the night would end up in frustration. He'd end up blowing all his wages for the week, all for a cuddle and a peck on the cheek. Come dancing, that's how they did it when I was just a kid. And when they said come dancing, my sister always did.
Them in the moonlight, two silhouettes saying goodnight by the garden gate.
The day they knocked down the pally, my sister stood and cried. The day they knocked down the pally, part of my childhood died, just died. My sister's married and she lives on an estate. Her daughters go out, now it's her turn to wait. She knows they get away with things she never could. But if I asked her, I wonder if she would.
Come dancing,
come on sister, have yourself a ball. Don't be afraid to come dancing, it's only natural.
Is Kinks. It's Chris Earle. It's 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford. Triple play here with you until 8 p.m.
Standing in the middle of nowhere, wondering how to begin. Lost between tomorrow and yesterday, between now and then. And now we're back.
All right, starting it off with the Kinks. It's WMFO in Medford. How about a little treat? Something from my dad. I think I'm going to do something fun. For 2017, I think I'm going to do this. As long as he keeps calling me, which he does, and there's some weeks that I just never call him back because it's exhausting, I'm going to play some messages from my dad. My dad will call me up, and he'll have something to say. It might be inviting me over. It might be inviting me over for dinner. Usually he has something large, like a turkey or a roast or something like that, something that he can't eat at all, and he doesn't want to throw it away. Or he'll call complaining about my car or my brother. Let's see what my dad called me for on June 8th, 2015. Let's go back to June 8th, 2015. This is my father, Paul Earle, calling me on the phone.
Hey, Christian. How you doing? I got your message. Yeah, I mean, what happened was there's a little dial switch on the dashboard thing. Are you there?
Hello?
You there, Chris? Hello?
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 You there? Chris?
Yeah. Call waiting? Answer? Hello? This thing work?
He's one of the smartest guys I know, but he doesn't know how to use a phone. That was my father, Paul Earle, from June 8th, 2015. I have no idea why he called, but I kept that message because it was hilarious.
I've been alone with you inside my mind. And in my dreams, I've kissed your lips a thousand times. I sometimes see you pass outside my door. Hello? Is it me you're looking for? I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your smile. You're all I've ever wanted. And my arms are open. Cause you know just what to say, and you know just what to do, and I want to tell you so much.
Are you there?
Hello?
You there, Chris? Hello?
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 The sunlight in your hair, and tell you time and time again how much I care. Sometimes I feel my heart will overflow. Hello, I've just got to let you know.
Hello?
You there, Chris? Hello?
And I wonder what you do.
Hello? Hello?
Are you somewhere feeling lonely? Or is someone loving you?
Hello? You there?
Tell me how
Chris.
To win your heart.
Yeah.
For I haven't got a clue. But let
Hello?
Me start by
saying,
I love you.
How you doing? I got your message. Yeah, I mean, what happened was there's a little dial switch on the dashboard And you're in, are you there?
Hello?
You there, Chris? Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello? You there? Chris?
Yeah. Are you waiting?
Answer me.
Hello? Does thing work? Tell me how to win your heart, for I haven't got a clue.
But let me start by saying I love you. Are you there?
Hello?
You there, Chris? Hello?
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 There's my dad. Hello? Hello, Dad.
Hello?
Hello?
You there?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hello?
Call waiting?
Call waiting. Yep.
Hello?
Hello?
Does thing work?
That's my daddy. Yep, it does, Dad. It's called the phone. All you got to do is just leave a message. You don't pick up. You don't pick up when you're not there. Anyway, why don't we do another one? That was fun. Let's do one from Daddy from October. October 18th, 2016. Let's see what Daddy has to say on October 18th, 2016. This is my new segment called Chris Dad. Or, Chris, are you there? Or, advice from dad. Something like that. I haven't fixed on a title yet, but this is going to be new for 2016. I will be playing you some messages from my dad, Paul Earl, every week here on Time Travel from October 18th, 2016, 5:56 p.m. It's Paul Earl.
Chris, Dad, it's almost 6 o'clock. Yeah, I had bought a small 2.5-pound eye-round rose last night. And Ginny just went out to get her eyebrows rock-waxed at the mall. So you want to come here and eat it? I got baked potatoes with the eye-round rose and, you know, green beans. It's up to you. If you don't want to, it's okay. I wasn't expecting the weather to be like it was today. It never warmed up. Still wanted to cut the grass and I still got some painting to do. Doesn't look like it. So that's it. I'm putting the roast in now. The baked potatoes have been in. It's going to be done 6:45. Bye.
You're listening to Triple Play with Chris Earl. Missing Persons up next. And then a call from Adam Roth all the way out in California.
Look ahead as we pass, try and focus on it. I won't be fooled by a cheap cinematic trick. It must have been just a cardboard cutout of a man so forty. Casting from the record stand, walking in a lane. Walking in a lane. Nobody walks in a lane. Walking in a lane. Nobody walks in a lane. I don't know who could have been alone.
You're listening to WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. It is Triple Play with Chris Earle. Normally, it's Time Travel with Chris Earle, and other times, it's the Big 80s with Chris Earle and Sucking in the 70s with Chris Earle. Usually, it's Chris Earle doing something. It's Watch This with Chris Earle. It's Chris Earle pulls himself furiously. And it is Adam Roth here on WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. Time Travel with Chris Earle here with you until 8 p.m. And we got Adam on the line. Can you hear me, Adam? Adam, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
There he is.
This is awesome. No, I feel like I'm the psychotic listener who keeps calling repetitively.
So I have an intro just performed between pumps 5 and 6 at the Shrewsbury Mobile Station. Shrewsbury, Mass?
No. Just, when it came to comedy, you always like to have like a nice little snappy intro when it came to performing. And I always used to say, yeah, you can see him between pumps number 5 and 6 and such a gas station in such and such a place in New Jersey.
There you go.
Usually a good headline grabber there.
There you go. I'll give you another one. I'll be like, you ever laugh so hard you pee? You ever laugh so hard like one or two drips just come out? Next guy coming to the phone, last time I saw him, 3 drips. Adam Roth.
That's great. It's borderline blue humor, but it's Friday afternoon. Nothing but blue humor can apply.
That's right. That's what we do here. That's one of the things I like to do is educate as well as entertain. But a lot of people always consider me either a drunk uncle or the 12-year-old boy type of humor. And that was pretty much my big following, yeah. 12-year-old boys love me. Yeah.
That's great. It's great at middle school affairs, but it's always tough when it comes to mixed company at a formal event.
That is true. That is true. So how's the weather down there? You're in Pasadena, California?
Yeah. I know this is the time when, like, Southern Californians, they're very detestable because at this point, I've walked around in a T-shirt for an hour outside here. It's 70, 71 degrees. We had just gone through a cold snap into the 50s. So very delightful weather and very peaceful. So lots of sailors outside there.
Nice. Yeah, not too bad here in Massachusetts. Things are warming up and the snow and the ice is going away very quickly. You still have family out in Massachusetts?
I wish I could say I did, but my folks have long been removed from the area for 15 years, and my aunt, God rest her soul, she moved down to Florida before passing away. So, literally, I just have a few links other than my allegiance to the 4 sports teams, and I just live vicariously through any Boston stories, any pizza that you may enjoy,
sure,
all the old places on the Cape, and the 2-story track.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I used to go. As a matter of fact, every now and then, every couple of years, I will find myself in Amherst going to Antonio's for a slice of pizza, doing a little hike out there, and going to the dining commons and having a chicken puck, maybe some cavatelli supreme. What else did we used to hide in our shorts on the way back to the dorms when it was a good meal?
Well, yeah, it was kind of an all you can. Take a fare. I mean, the chips are pretty easy to port, and then that poor campus store across from the dining commons would never get the business because you're just, take a week's worth of food and stick it in your fridge.
That's right. Yeah. My mom gave me the fridge when I was a freshman, and I had Vienna sausages was in the fridge, and it stayed there all year. I'm like, who's eating Vienna sausages and deviled ham? Not many people.
No. Some people collect wines. Others, not so much, and that's respectable.
I actually took the Vienna sausages, and I one night in the middle of the night, myself and my roommate put them to the resident assistant's dorm room, and we placed all the Vienna sausages down in his dorm. So when he came out in the morning, he ended up slipping on all the wieners. So
I heard about this. This was advertised as Schnitzelgate.
Yeah. I don't know what the statute of limitations is on me giving away some of my trade secrets from back in the day, but that was one of my many feats. Back when I was more of an asshole. And I didn't care as much. Right?
This was like, that's also everything, anything goes over here. That's a brilliant little scheme, though. If you're already was a total wiener, as it were, that's great recourse.
Well, what was funny is, I mean, I think he had kind of a point. I was playing my music really loud. And he didn't like the loud music, and neither did most of the people. But, you know, back then, I liked the Beastie Boys. I liked the Public Enemy. I liked the Ice-T. I liked to play the music loud. I liked to disturb the neighbors. I want to enjoy the fruits of my labors. So all of a sudden, I got the RA, you know, like, yeah, you guys got to turn the music down. And then it didn't help that my roommate at the time, Kevin, he was a real punk. And he's like, yeah, we got to mess with this guy. So, like, we're taking all those Vienna sausages that your mom bought, and we're going to stick them under his dorm. So it was his idea, but I was part of it. I was part of it. I was an accessory.
That's like out of an Animal House, the grocery store. Nothing for me today, thanks.
right. He's got, like, big steaks, right? Steaks under his sweater. Nothing for me today, thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. So
a prank. I'm taking paternity. Oh, I want to go. And the girl happens to be something like 13-odd years of age of some sort. That's classic 70s writing, by the way, which we'll get into later.
So there's a few stories on here that you sent me for this week's round, and a few of them involve bowling. Why don't you tell us a little bit about bowling? And you bowled with two fairly important, famous people here.
So this is back in the late 90s. I was doing a job for TNT at the time. My brother and I were working on something called Chowderheads, which still can be found on the internet, about these masshole kids who love wrestling, and it was an 8-series cartoon deal. But
sure.
I was out there working, and my brother said, hey, you got to join us out with a crew at Jerry's Famous Deli, which is a big bowling place in Ventura. I think it's long closed now, but we wound up going bowling, and the guy who is funding, who's bankrolling our production, is Jason Hervey, like the same kid from Pee Wee's Big Adventure and a few other 80s notable things. But, like, he was a totally nice dude. I bowled pretty well that night. And to the left of me, I didn't realize it, but there's William Zabka just bowling up a storm right next to me. And, you know, you're so concentrated in bowling, sometimes you don't realize who's to the left and the right of you. So
sure.
It was an absolute 80s. It was like an 80s. A modicum of talent there between lanes 17 and 18 over Jerry Sands. And they had great food on there, too. So it was a nice evening.
Yeah, and William Zabka, of course, had not only the Karate Kid, but years later, you know, you got the really big Cobra Kai on it was on YouTube, and then it moved over to Netflix and became another big hit. I loved that first season. I thought it was just great that they made him kind of the hero, and Ralph Macchio was just kind of a real dick.
great reversal of fortune right there. But the funny thing I like about Cobra Kai is they really suspend disbelief in that there's any bullying at school or police getting involved if anybody, you know, blowing somebody's nose, which I think is pretty brilliant as far as an artistic choice.
Right. And of course,
nobody goes to jail.
And of course, Jason Hervey was also in. Wasn't he in one of the Christmas stories? Was he in Christmas Story as well? He was in Wonder Years, right? And
yes, he was the older brother in Wonder Years. That's right.
Yeah. That's great. I bowled. Who did I bowl with? I bowled with my friend Matt out in Florida. That was pretty fun. I can't say I bowled with anybody that important, but I did bowl with Jerry. It was Jerry Lewis's telethon, and I got a high triple. It was about 124, which wasn't bad for a 12-year-old kid.
Oh, absolutely. Was that the big ball bowling, or was that Candle? That would have been put you in the Candlepin Hall of Fame. But
yeah, that was a big ball. I didn't realize until later, too, the glow balls are kind of nice, too. They still have the glow bowling?
Oh, yeah. The kids love that stuff now. Like, when you go over to any of them, there's so much mixed media going on when it comes to the formats of bowling. It's pretty brilliant.
Yeah. I love bowling. I think life is kind of a little bit of a bowling. You got to just pick up that spare on the way out. You got to end strong, you know? It's like
that's
you got one more ball. That's it. How many
Absolutely.
Balls you got left? That's the story of my life. How many balls you got left?
My friend Ed says that all the time. You just get down the lane and just hit as many pins as you possibly can, if it's strike or otherwise.
Right. And you know what? What's fun, too, is you always see somebody that's just not that good, but they throw it as fast as they can, and they just smash that gutter and go out with style. You know? It's like, we're not getting any points, but I'm going to let you know I was here.
I love it, especially if it's like a 90-year-old arthritic dude. He probably used to bowl like a 240 or 250, but now he's just been relegated to just these.
Sure.
Hands McGee, and he just doesn't care. Just a reverence for the oil and the wood and the lathe.
I'm going to put a little Tears for Fears in the background here. Advice for the young at heart. We're both, I would consider us middle-aged men at this point. Definitely men's men.
Middle-aged plus 10 for me. Underrated band as well, and an underrated greatest hits, Tears for Fears. That's just some of their lesser, sneakier stuff, like Seeds of Love and some of the other stuff. It's just, it grows on you.
Yeah, they just came out with a new album about a year or so ago, and they look like they're right out of Game of Thrones. They're like silver-haired, long hair, and they're all like they're sitting on like a rocking chair together. I'm like, this is kind of cool. I think it's called The Tipping Point, and there's a few songs from Tears for Fears in there, and they got the.
I didn't realize that they sort of had to patch things up just to sort of move forward, but so it sounds like they're dressed as Vegas magicians.
Yeah. That's the story. That's pretty much the story of like every duo. Like when there's like the Hall & Oates, like you ever think Hall & Oates are ever going to get back together? I think they hate each other.
Yeah, it's like Kramer versus Hall versus Oates.
Yeah, that's true. It's just like, how much money do you need? That's when it comes down to it. It's like, you know what? Give Oates a little extra money, you know. Hall got the Sugar Shack going and got all his friends there and made a ton of money after that. It's like, come on. It's like, give Hoetz a couple extra butts and get back together with him. My friend...
Well, it's a bum, will you? You know?
My friend...
They did that for maybe David Lee Roth out here in Pasadena, where they let the guy, you know, still have a career, even though he's a crazy dude on a bicycle at the time.
I got a David Lee Roth story for you, but I got to tell you very briefly. My buddy Scott went out to go see Hall & Oates, and this is before Daryl Hall had the whole VH1 show that took off there, and he got, you know, so this is before his big resurgence again. And he said they opened up, it was a December show, and they opened up with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and there was a guy just like booing and hissing at them the whole time. And they stopped the show, and they said, give that man his money back. And he's like, get the F out of our show. He's like, this is our music, this is our rock and roll, this is what we're doing. And I thought that was just great.
If I want to be Private Eyes.
Yeah.
Know, it's like, you know, battle for two nights from now. Buy the ticket then, pal.
It's like, I want Maneater. I don't want Santa Claus, you know? Maneater. Oh, man. And David Lee Roth, I didn't get a chance to tell you this one, I don't think, but a couple of years ago, he was going to do a Vegas show. He's doing Vegas New Year's Eve. He made an announcement. It's going to be his last shows. So I talked to my brother, my cousin. I ended up getting us a couple of tickets, and we're flying down for Vegas. I believe this was 2019 into 2020 or 2020 into 21. And so right before we get onto the plane in Logan out of Boston, we hear the show's been canceled because someone has COVID. And I'm like, well, let's see. It's the David Lee Roth Band. Who is important enough that they need to cancel the show? It's got to be David Lee Roth, right? It can't be like a session player in Vegas. You can just grab somebody else. So we're like, well, should we still go? So we decide to go. And we get down there, and they're like, well, they're going to redo the shows for two more nights from now. So if you want to stick around Vegas for two more nights, you know, we're going to do the shows anyway. So I'm like, all right, I'll stick around. I buy a couple more nights in the hotel. And at this point, you know, COVID's pretty big, you know, so people are pretty skeptical of one another and wandering around. We ended up going to just the outside and watching the fireworks for New Year's because the show was canceled and we had nothing else to do. And then he canceled the other shows. And we're like, okay, so he decided to cancel his farewell tour altogether. So nobody's heard from David Lee Roth since. And,
oh my God! You know, he's usually, people see him around here. His dad's house is like a mile down from where Casey and I do our outdoor like core training and stuff over in Orange Grove. But like occasionally, you just see crazy old Dave like riding on to some beach cruiser, talking himself, or amp himself up. But you guys took all the trouble to book a flight, book hotels, and then got COVID, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it was so disappointing. And I'm like, and I always thought he was great. You know, I mean, he was hugely entertaining. And to me, still the best frontman of all time of any rock and roll band was David Lee Roth. With Van Halen.
Absolutely, without question. Again, he fueled so much of what the 70s and the 80s, you know, rock and party, you know, beyond anything from like a Kiss party band group, there was real skill in those guys. By the way, I think I was supposed to send you a picture outside the liquor store about a mile down the street is the writings of Alex and Edward Van Halen in the cement outside of the liquor store. That's still stenciled into the cement from like the early 70s.
That is great. That is great.
Yeah. And my neighbor Ralph used it like my neighbor Ralph had been here since like the 60s, and he said he remembers going to a high school party where Van Halen was just a band in the backyard. I was just like, Christ, Ralph, did you get autographs? Like, oh no, we were all too high. We were way too high to care. Like 20 people, and Van Halen was playing in the backyard. It was like the late 60s, early 70s. That's how it went over here.
Yeah, that's great. That's so much fun. It's just such a disappointment there at the end. I'm just like, God damn it. You know, it's like, come on, Dave. It's like, I spent thousands to come down and see you, and you let me down. So now if he even came back and played in my backyard at this point, I'd be like, nope, I'm good. It's like, nope.
I'll give him a middle finger. If I see him just cruising around on the beach, cruising over in Old Town Pasadena, I'll definitely pass on those sentiments, okay?
Yeah, sounds good. I've actually got like a little poster, and they gave me like a lanyard. It's like Diamond Dave in Vegas, and it's like, so I got a couple of lanyards of the show that never happened, you know. Like, oh boy. Well, I'm gonna throw a little. We got a little Super Freak in the background, but I think I'm gonna throw in a little Cool in the Gang in there while we're talking here with Adam Roth out in Pasadena, California. I got a little ladies' night. There's a little Joanna in there. Let's talk about what else we got on the list here from this week. You had another story out of, Pulp Fiction Land. Didn't you mention?
Oh, yes, you want more Peter Green?
Sure, Peter Green story.
I seem to like hearing about Peter Green. I will not talk about him if it's just too mundane, but. So about 2 months or 3 months after he was no longer our neighbor, my wife Casey and I are driving around Hollywood, and who do we see just walk right in front of our car, but like 6'4", big boot stomping Peter Green, and he's walking around. He's got that look on his face like either I'm going to be discovered today or I'm getting drugs today. One of those. Basically, my wife says, whoa, that was Peter. Holy crap, that was Peter Green.
Nice.
Yeah, that's crazy, right? He's like, she's like, circle the block. What? Wait a second. Now, my wife is relatively mild-mannered. She didn't do anything too crazy. She's pretty by the book. I was like, you know, maybe Hollywood's getting to my wife. She's starting to stalk B-level celebrities. So he circled around again.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he was like looking for drugs or something like that around just east of Mass Chinese Theater. He didn't remember, like, Casey, you know, totally, you know, cursing him out about the music, and didn't remember me kicking him when he was, you know, passed out from drugs on a bender from the night before on our front lawn.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys, it's like, as soon as you're out of sight, you're out of mind. And I can give you one last one. This is the best Peter Green story, if you wish.
Sure. Actually, let me just throw this in there, too, for those of you who don't know who Peter Green is. He played Zed in Pulp Fiction. He was also the villain in The Mask, I believe, with Cameron Diaz, Jim Carrey, who's in The Usual Suspect as well. Judgment Night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Under Siege 2.
He had his time.
Yeah, he did. But you would definitely recognize this man. He's very, he looks kind of alien-ish, don't you think? Kind of looks like that tough 90s villain, 80s, 90s villain.
Yeah, he's very recognizable. He's very tall, and Zed is on drugs, baby. Zed is on drugs.
So what's that other? So what's the little addendum you got there?
So this happened, like, okay, so it was like 2 in the morning, and my wife is telling me about this. Like, she wakes up because somebody's stomping upstairs. This is at our apartment in North Hollywood here. She just hears, bump, 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 bump. Where are they? S. Where are my drugs? He's talking to himself. Peter is talking to himself. Where are his drugs? And then he just starts getting really worked up. He's like, oh my God, where are my drugs? Where are my drugs? And there was a pause. He goes, God, why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this to me? It was one of the best calls to action from the deity over lost drugs ever heard in the Hollywood industry.
Yeah, that would have been good for a PSA for the station. Just like, don't do drugs. Yeah, when you are calling for God to find your drugs for you, you've gone a little overboard.
Usually a sign. Yeah, that's usually the sign to no longer do this activity.
Yeah, yeah. A little Hollywood swinging in the background. That's apropos here. It's Adam Roth from Pasadena, California. My name is Chris Earle. It is WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. We're talking about some little stories here. Let's hear about Courtney Love and Francis Bean Cobain, which is Courtney's kid with the Nirvana man.
That's right. This was back in 2008. My brother was having some gathering over to his house. This is over in Hollywood. And my parents were there. I think my other brother was there. Robert Pattinson shows up from the Twilight fame.
Sure.
All sorts of folks are coming through. And I hear a knock at the door. And I open the door, and it's Courtney Love, who was not on drugs, with her daughter, Frances Bean Cobain. And, you know, you don't know what to expect when it comes to Courtney Love or Frances Bean Cobain, but they were supremely polite party guests. And they were very, very congenial. And, you know, anything you might have heard from, you know, the years where she played the whole or, you know, whatever Frances has been through, especially with the passing of her father, they were very, you know, very decent people. Apparently my mom gets along very well with Courtney Love, and I don't know why Courtney Love and her hit it off, but, it's friendships can be, you know, weird and, you know, come out of left field sometimes, right?
That is true. That is true. I'm still good friends with my buddy Ray, who's turned 82 years old. He was one of my first jobs getting out of college, and we had breakfast a couple of months ago, and he's still gone. His wife had passed away, but it's nice to have that perspective of somebody who's 30 years older than you, but isn't a family member. You know, he's become a friend over the years, so it's kind of neat to see how his life has progressed. And you know, we've gotten so comfortable with one another and the friendship over the years that we talk about how things are going, and there's different life perspectives when you get to see something like that, you know. So it is nice to have somebody who's much younger be friends with somebody who's older, and I'm sure we get to those ripe old ages. I'm sure that we are the type of people that can pretty much make friends at the bus stop, you know, like Forrest Gump.
I would love that. I plan to have no friends, by the way, just no friends whatsoever. I actually might just be at the bus stop, you know, just sort of talking to myself, you know, my hands in French.
Where are my drugs? Where are my chocolates? Where are my chocolates, Jenny? Yeah. Jenny, where are my chocolates? Yeah, bus. George Clooney in a 2x2 basketball game on the Warner Brothers lot. I want to hear about this story. Was he? So he was a prick?
Yeah.
I always thought he would seem like a decent dude, no?
I think he was reasonable. It's just that, like, for some reason, in between takes of one of his films, this was like in 2006, my buddies and I from Digital Production were walking by the movie lot, and we see Clooney doing a 2-on-2 basketball game with a crowd of people around him. And George Clooney, he is not exactly LeBron when it comes to basketball. But, you know, he puts up a fight. He's 5'9". So I kind of went over by him. I was watching a little bit, and I said to him, hey, man, you and anybody else on this lot versus my boy and I, anybody. And he kind of looked at me as he was dribbling and said, like, yeah, whatever, kid.
Yep.
And I was just like, okay. I see you, George.
He was in his serious Siriana movie came out probably near that year, so he was in a serious mode. You didn't get to have the fun Clooney from the Coen Brothers days, you know.
Right, it certainly wasn't Space Jam, that's for sure, because he was bricking it up that afternoon. And everybody was pretending that he was just Jordan, which is hysterical.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, he's slowing down a little bit, too. I heard he had some back trouble over the years. He's mostly, like, behind the camera and producing stuff now, right, and directing?
Yeah, I think time catches up to everybody here. But, you know, again, terrific actor. I loved him in The Descendants. I thought his performance there with the Kamehameha Descendants was really interesting, and, you know, it was a neat dynamic. You know, less traveled storylines with, like, the Hawaiian families.
Yeah, yeah. I just saw The Holdovers, same director, and I thought it was great. No George Clooney in it, but I thought it was pretty awesome. But, yeah, I just saw Intolerable Cruelty again for the second time. I had seen it only once before, and that's pretty fun. And Catherine Zeta-Jones in that, oh, my God, it's like she's picture perfect in that movie. God.
Yeah. Some people, they just look amazing on camera. Catherine Zeta-Jones can definitely be counted on as one of those particular.
I want to do a two-by-two basketball match with her and just be like, you know what, pick anybody. Even pick Clooney.
So the town flag is out already there, Chris, that, like, you know, this joins it. It's a standing invitation for Catherine Zeta-Jones and, you know, maybe someone from,
Pick Michael Douglas. You can even pick that loser George Clooney. I'll play you. Let's just play horse together. I just want to watch you bounce up and down. Does anybody ever play horse anymore out in the basketball? That's probably
still do. My boys are still playing, so yeah, they'll make me, you know, play horse and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's definitely defies time in that particular game for boys and girls.
Yeah. I come out and I'll play a little game of horse, see if anybody wants to play some horse with me. Like, I'll bring Larry Bird with me. We're going to play a nice game of horse.
That always goes over well with a Southern California crowd, Larry Bird. Like, Larry Bird puts anything. You know, if you learn anything from the show Showtime, and that is Larry Bird is all evil and all-encompassing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's kind of amazing.
There's a story here that you mentioned about Ricky Calhoun, a landline access to Prince's condo in Hollywood, and he was talking with Apollonia from Apollonia 6.
Yeah. It was a very, like, I sat for about an hour talking with Ricky Calhoun, who, you know, he lives nearby here. He was also in the music fold with Prince back in the late 70s and early 80s,
mm-hmm.
and he was also the lyricist for Prince for a number of years, but he was also... He also property managed for him, from what I understand. And it was a complex over by Cahuenga Boulevard, just north of, like, that, you know, area you would consider Hollywood.
Yep.
Apparently the landlines, the wires crossed over a great deal, because he said in his apartment or his condo, you could hear, like, private discussions he was having with, like, Apollonia and a few other band members as well. And I thought that was quite interesting that, like, none of that stuff could be... If he had recorded that, that would have been solid gold.
Oh, absolutely.
But what a rarity just to be a fly on the wall for some of that stuff.
Yeah, it's awesome. I miss Prince. He was still my... For music, Prince was my man. I still have, you know, all the stuff. I listen to him every day. I just miss him. It's just a bummer that, you know... It turns out, you know, he went out and kind of went out like a punk at the end. It's a shame, but man was probably in pain, and not many people knew about it, you know, publicly at least.
That's it. You know, it's like Michael Jackson. Like, these guys are just out there rehearsing and performing as well as singing. And when you're 55 or 57, you know, everybody can't be Mick Jagger.
Right.
And I think it just caught up to him in terms of, like, you know, hip pain, knee pain, and the feet.
Absolutely, yeah.
Heels.
Yeah, we touched on this a little bit last week, and, like, Mick Jagger, you know, when he had his heart attack, you know, here he is, you know, a day or two later, and he's spinning around, he's, you know, doing dances, and he's just back on stage because, you know, it's a juggernaut. They have a show to do, you know. It's like there's millions and millions of dollars and, you know, people on board that work the Rolling Stones juggernaut. It's like Mick can't be out for more than a day. We got to get him back to work so everybody makes money. And
so he's making $2,000 a ticket. It's,
yeah.
Like, there's really, Chris, would you agree with me on this? There's really, like, three performers out there that command that kind of money, and that is the Stones.
Sure.
You could throw in, you know, look at the Swifties with Taylor Swift, but Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Those are sort of the three that really know, you know, that they are a billion-dollar commodity.
It's interesting that Billy Joel hasn't produced anything since 1993 other than just kind of going in and playing his hits, and people still go to see him. It's it's crazy to me. I'm just like, wow. And I would think that's multi-generational. A lot of people, especially with Piano Man and a bunch of other stuff. I mean, most college kids and high school kids probably know who Billy Joel is. I mean, Taylor Swift is completely different because, you know, it's completely different generation, and she's been around since probably their teens. So all these people are growing up with her, and they're all following her. And yeah, the Stones, a big one. And, you know, it's like we talked a little bit about Clint Eastwood last week. And it's just like there's very few performers that'll still command going to see him. I saw like the Eagles a couple months ago while it was in the summertime, and they were still great, you know, and they're down a member. It's like all these rock bands are still going without members, and they're still getting money. And one
the brands are amazing. It's not just like, you know, the 50s doo-wop stuff in Vegas. It's like these guys really, you know, they're well managed, and they sort of have a great business, you know, package. And, you know, you're going to have a cross-generational draw.
Yep.
You know, like you made a very good point about Billy Joel. Like, he's cross-generational now. It's like I have a buddy. She's from my track team in high school. But like, she and her daughter will go see Billy Joel. She and her friend will see Billy Joel when he comes out to Arizona. But they'll also go see Taylor Swift too.
Right.
With her daughter.
Right. Yeah. The and that's one of the things too is like you had the Stones. I remember this promotional junket for like Hang Fire, which was like it was 1981 Tattoo You album, and they're like, "Geez, you're still doing it after 17 years? What are you guys going to be doing this into your 40s and 50s?" And they're like, "Yeah, we can't believe it, you know." And the Who, the same thing. You hear all these old interviews, you know, and they're like, "Yeah, you're not going to be doing this in 20 years, being a rock and roller. That's going to last 5 or 6 years." And it's like, well, rock and roll is kind of on its way out, and I'd say there's only a few rock and roll bands that are actually left, but you know, the old rockers are still there to see all the people that still liked rock and roll. You know, we're still going to pay our money to go out and see. I mean, we ended up going for a nice trip to Vegas to see U2, you know, and it was amazing at the Sphere. And you know, it was expensive, but at the same time, I'm like, U2 is not at their peak anymore, you know, and they were down a member. They were down Larry. Larry wasn't there. The drummer wasn't there. So, but they're still commanding this big money.
Yeah, you could probably put Bono and U2 in there as a fourth as well.
Yes.
Sunray, others, but really, U2 has that same kind of like a cross-generational draw. And I know other people who went to go see that U2 concert in Las Vegas. It's just, you know, a wonderful atmosphere, a memorable weekend. It's amazing. You know, for many, this is part of the bucket list.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, at that point, you know, I've seen U2 a few dozen times. I saw them over at Croke Park in Ireland, which was amazing. And honestly, at this point, I don't really need to see U2 again. I've seen them as much as I love them. But there's other bands that you know, just got stopped, like the Beastie Boys and Rush, because their members died. And they were also multi-generational. You know, I mean, Rush had been around since, you know, early 70s, and you know, I couldn't believe how many people, when I saw Rush for the last time, there were kids half my age there that knew every single Rush song. I'm like, wow, this is definitely a young boy band. I mean, there were plenty of members that were female that were into Rush, but I mean, primarily that was a teenage boy band. You know, like the Scientists of the high school always loved Rush. You know, they loved the technical part
absolutely.
Of it. You know,
absolutely. One thing that we could talk about, just on that thread over there, Chris, is that maybe the music memorabilia angle of like old concert shirts that go for $3,000 to $5,000 from Metallica and Scorpions,
yep,
you know, over in the Middle East and in Japan. Maybe that's sort of helping fuel people's interests for you know, nostalgic music, because they long for those kinds of, you know, feelings and, you know, the types of musical freedoms that these bands enjoy.
Yeah,
much like Saga.
Yeah, I got to throw some Saga in there. We were talking about that band, and Adam had put a request in for the band Saga, and we'll get that on here. Shelley Duvall, the sad story of Shelley Duvall. I always thought she was great, but it looks like in the past 20, 30 years, I haven't been too kind to her. So it says you have a story with Shelley Duvall from 2001.
Yep, a rather uplifting story, because she was sort of just not acting very much anymore. She just appeared in something every so often. But she's a big animal rights, you know, activist and now influencer. But I had gotten in touch with her over something. We wound up having a couple of hour-long conversations because my wife and I had lizards at the time, and she has good knowledge of reptile care. And I remember, first of all, telling her that I saw the movie Popeye. I convinced my Aunt Gladys to go see it at the Alston Brighton Cinema four weekends in a row in December of 80, second to my Revenge of the Nerds record of seeing it seven straight weekends uncaught. she was very receptive. She was a little weird. You know, I didn't talk much Shining with her, but, you know, she was telling me, one of the weirdest things she said to me was, and I was telling her that my Australian bearded dragon Frankie used to